evening, everybody. It's the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful, cold Norwalk, Connecticut. To my right, I got my partner, Neil Lynch. Neil, how we doing?
I'll tell you how cold it is.
That's cold. You took training, dude. That's a rough travel.
The train had notices on the seat. They printed out notices to our customers, alert.
It's cold.
This morning's delays. They were explaining this morning's delays. It's so cold that the rails were brittle, they constricted and contracted, and just broke in several locations.
Well, you got that going for you. Yeah. But you made it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On sheer will. I carried the
you
train.
Guys, that's it, dude. It was the Polar Express. We got Tony D behind the glass back in studio after his flu virus. He still don't sound good. I think we got the glass in between us because I don't want to be too close to Tony D. I got a family to think about.
He's basically a carrier monkey right now.
Lot to get to today. We got a nice guest joining us later. A lot of the Connecticut people don't know him from the Connecticut Post. We got Sean Patrick Bowley. He's going to be calling in, talking a little bit of high school sports, which we like to cover every now and again. So he'll be calling in a little bit. Obviously, we're going to get to some Knicks, some Nets, some Manti Te'o, which we're going to save the last 85 minutes of the show for that. But we got to start with championship weekend, a little recap action. That first game to me kind of lived up to the hype as far as you knew it was going to be a close game. You took San Fran, I took Atlanta. I thought I was looking really good, up 17-0 there. But, it's like they just took their, once Michael Turner went out, it was clear they couldn't run the ball. I don't know why they didn't just put their foot back on the gas and start throwing the ball downfield. I mean, early on that first quarter, Julio Jones was completely unstoppable.
Yep.
Obviously, Gonzalez was making plays. And you say to yourself, just keep your foot on the gas here. You just got burnt last week, the previous week, blowing a 20-point lead at home. When it was 17-0, I remember thinking, early in the second quarter, it was like 6 seconds into the second quarter, they went up. And I said, I don't want to get confident here because it's got it written all over it. They took their foot off the gas and let them right back in the game. They only scored 7 points after that. I mean, what was your takeaway from that game?
I had no doubt in my mind that it was going to be close. Even when San Francisco was down big to start off the game, it was just a matter of Kaepernick getting going.
Yeah.
There were a lot of talk in the days following after about the read option. Is it a fad? And we mentioned it last week. I don't think it is. I think it's going to be around for a while. Especially when you have guys like Kaepernick that can run it so well.
And throw the ball. I think that's the key to
it. Well, that's the whole key.
Because people bring up like a guy, we joked around a little bit like about Vince Young last week coming in and playing maybe in Philadelphia again under Chip Kelly. But the reason it wouldn't work for him is because he's not an accurate enough passer. And I think it's more than being accurate. It's really decision-making also. Even like Tim Tebow. As great as he is, it was running it in Denver. It seemed to me like he just kept it every time. It's like when he was with the Jets, maybe because he knew he was only getting a couple plays.
Yeah.
But it was like there was no. It was basically just a fake handoff. It was not a read option. It was like he wasn't reading anything.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the defense was giving it, he was going to run it,
right,
get his 3 yards, and get off the field. That could be a product of the fact that he's like, I'm only going to get a couple plays. I got to make plays. But so you also there is a good sense of just football IQ as well.
Yep.
So. I think that a guy like Kaepernick, who can throw the ball, he's got a rifle for an arm.
Yeah.
And people talk about him not being accurate, but from what I've seen, it's not like I watched a lot of Niners games over the course of the season. What I've seen him in this playoffs, he's been very accurate.
Yeah.
There's not many times when you see him really missing an open guy. I've seen him fit it into tight windows. You saw Crabtree make a couple great catches in traffic that are fit into tiny windows.
Yep.
So he could do all that. The question about the read option to me is how long. And it's not a durability thing with Kaepernick because he is bigger, but how long a guy's speed will keep him able to be able to run that. Like Kaepernick, 10 years from now, is he going to still be able to run that? He's going to clearly lose a step, but I think he's good enough to be a pocket passer. And I'll reiterate again how wrong I was about Kaepernick because he keeps proving me wrong.
But if you look in both games, the losing team from a stats point basically outgained and outperformed, just from a number standpoint, in both games.
Yeah.
Minus the rushing in New England, but it was not making mistakes, not making critical mistakes. You know, Kaepernick didn't make mistakes. Matt Ryan had the one pick. You know, it's just little things. You know, and I thought the David Akers miss was going to really come back to haunt them. And
yeah, I did too. And I was watching it with a couple of 49ers fans, and they were saying the same thing. And it was crazy because, I mean, he's one of the most consistent kickers in the history of football.
But he's been awful
and
this
just,
year.
This year, just, yeah. He just forgot how to kick. He was 9 of 19 over 40 yards. 40 yards. 40 yards. Between 40 and 45, you got to be 75-80%. He was 9 of 19 over 40 yards. And then they bring in, who they bring in? Little Billy Cundiff, didn't they bring in to compete with him? Somebody.
Yeah.
And they still stuck with him. The news came out today that they already said they're going to stick with him for the Super Bowl. He's their kicker. But that could be big. I mean, how many Super Bowls have we seen even just in our lifetimes come down to a kick?
Just in the past decade.
Yeah, right. And you look at, I mean, how many Super Bowls would Brady have if it wasn't for Vinatieri in his question? If he was just an ordinary kicker, I mean, he's probably the best kicker of all time, to be honest, plus-wise. So you look at it and you say, getting over that, to me, and it's just kind of stating the obvious, but that the play of the game was Matt Ryan fumbling that shotgun snap, just dropping it, taking his eyes off the ball. I mean, you know, you look at a guy, how many thousands of times has he just received a snap like that?
I mean, it's really came down to like two or three plays. The fact that they didn't convert in the red zone, the Falcons did not convert in the red zone, that's huge. And then, you know, like you said, the fumble and the pick. It's those two or three plays, he didn't really make those mistakes. You know, against Seattle, he had 30-some-odd seconds left. He made clutch passes, boom, got him in position for the field goal.
When they got that call on that questionable catch by Douglas down the sideline, which, first of all, what did he fall down for? He could have gotten, you know, inside the 10. He just falls down. But everybody I'm watching it with thought it was a drop. Judging by what I've heard from the experts, that the ball can hit the ground as long as the ref believes that he controlled the football. Now, to me, it looked like, and I'm rooting for the foul because I was like, they're definitely overturning that. Once they got that play, I said, well, now they're going to punch it right in. I was completely confident at that point. I was more confident than I was when we were up 17-0.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no way they're going to get stopped. You know, and then they get to 3rd-and-4. The guy, that D lineman for the Niners makes a great play because that probably was a touchdown. He jumps up, bats that ball down. And then obviously the play that everybody's still talking about is whether that was a hold or a pass interference there on that linebacker against Julio Jones on the 4th-down play.
Yeah.
I really didn't see it as either. And again, I'm rooting for the Falcons, both with my wallet and with what I said on the show.
But I
would love to say that I really think that was pass interference. Now, the question of whether it was a hold, you know, he was within 5 yards, but you still can't hold ever. You know, you can make contact. I just think he knew that the inside route was coming. He just got in the way.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like to me. I don't think he, you know, it looked kind of bad because Julio Jones or Roddy White?
I can't remember. I think it might have been Roddy White.
Right, it might have been Roddy White there making that in route. And you could see his arm kind of got caught behind the linebacker. But I just think the linebacker sat right where he knew that. He sat at the first down marker and said, he's not going to cut in front of my face.
Yeah.
And there was nothing he could do about it. What did your take of it? I mean, did you think it was a pass interference or maybe a legal hands or anything like that, holding?
No, I mean, I'm all about letting him play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you know, you don't want it to be gang warfare out there and prison rules, but at the same time, unless it's like really blatant, you know, I'd say it's fine. You never want the refs to be that critical, a factor in stuff like this.
I just think we're so trained at this point. Anytime there's any contact, we assume the flag is going to be thrown. That it's like, oh, that must have been a flag. But I agree with you. I'm glad that they let it play like that. It would have stunk for, you know, them to lose the game on a play like that. I mean, the guy, how else are you supposed to defend the guy? He cut off his route. He got in his way. And that was what he did.
But I forget who was saying it leading up to the game. They were saying that, you know, Vernon Davis was going to have to be a big integral part of the game, critical component for the 49ers to win. And it's true. I mean, you could see.
Like somebody had
where
said,
has he been?
He had 7 catches in the last 7 games or something insane like
it's
that.
It's insane. And you know, it's weird. I got to feel that a lot of it has to come down to play calling. You know, the offensive coordinator getting together with a game plan that was wholly different from what they've been running. I mean, you could see it started to come out against Green Bay. But the routes that he was running in this game were reminiscent of when he went off in last year's playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, the wheel routes.
Yeah.
The intermediate routes where he's kind of finding spots, you know, in between zones. And, you know, that's going to be huge for them going in the Super Bowl because the Ravens, from a defensive standpoint, you know, they took a lot of heat towards the end of the season for, you know, everyone thought, oh, well, it's because Ray Lewis is out. And, you know, Ray's definitely a motivational guy, but I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
He's like a, you know, when you talk about war, wins above replacement, that, you
yeah.
know, points above replacement, that he's going to, like, a 30-point swing yeah. when he's on the field.
That's like his 30-point. He plays in Vegas. When he plays the 30-point swing. Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with you. I think that the thing with Vernon Davis, it tends to kind of coincide almost exactly with Kaepernick coming in and taking over. So I think it is, you know, the offensive coordinator figuring out, because clearly they're running a completely different offense
yeah.
than they were running under Alex Smith. And when you're running those read options and those type of things, although it seems like, you know, you look at, like, in Carolina, they run the same type of offense, but they use their tight ends. I think maybe Kaepernick just felt comfortable when he was in there throwing to Crabtree, even Moss at times, even though Moss doesn't put up big numbers, but being like a safety valve. And maybe just that was his comfort zone,
yeah,
and he
and
just went with it, you know?
You think Moss has lost a step, and he has.
Clearly.
You know, but they still were playing him with a massive cushion.
That makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
That's why I thought, you know, it's surprising that Vernon Davis didn't have just a ridiculous season, because you watch games, and I've been, you know, the few games that I've saw and you know, nationally televised games from San Francisco, you watch, they're double-covering Moss all the time. You
yeah.
have to.
Yeah.
And he if you don't, you'll see him. He'll make a big play, you know, all the time. So I that signing kind of flew under the radar. I mean, people talked about it, obviously.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody thought of it being like, this is really going to be a game changer. He's going to help them. But he's been everything they've asked him to be. Playing in the Super Bowl here, you know, I think this is just the second time. The other time, obviously, they lost to the Giants. I mean, there's so many storylines in the Super Bowl that, you know, we'll go next week. I don't want to do predictions this week. I think we'll save that for next week.
Yeah.
But there's so many storylines to talk about. You go with Ray Lewis, you go with Randy Moss, you go with, obviously, the Harbaugh versus Harbaugh thing. You know, it's going to be great. But let's talk a little bit about the other game, which, you know, we talked about it last week. It's a 10-point spread. And I said, you know, I think if you like the Ravens to cover, take them outright, because if they're going to win, you know, they're either going to win or they're going to get blown out. And you saw them just, I mean, bottle up the offense there and just do a great job. I mean, I thought it was awesome. You want to take a quick phone call or you want to go into some stuff? What do you want to do?
I haven't talked on the phone with anyone in a long time. So
maybe it's a beautiful baby because I saw your set at Gotham Comedy Club. You're not the Neil Lynch from Gotham Comedy Club. But all right, we're going to go out to the phone lines. We got a couple calls. You're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, well, what's going on? Mike and Neil, first time, long time.
Hey, brother, how you doing? What are you calling
in
for?
Very good. I'm calling in from Norwalk.
Beautiful. It's a great place to raise some kids, right?
Yeah, well, Jesus. Hey, listen, Mike and Neil, I was going to give you a quick question. As you know, may possibly not know, my in-laws are from Boston, and whenever I sort of get lost in Boston, I always get into conversations with people at the bar over there and talk about who are the top three sports icons from Boston, you know, and it's always a different answer. And what I guess I wanted to ask you guys, do you think that Tom Brady will fit into the top three all-time Boston icons?
Wow. I'll start. I mean, you could follow in. I mean, the thing with the Boston icons, you're always going to have Ted Williams. You're always going to have.
But do you think that maybe possibly Brady could possibly have surpassed what Ted Williams has done?
Yeah. I mean, you look at championships, obviously. I mean, you look at Ted Williams. I think Ted Williams is the best all-around hitter in the history of baseball. So that's how good I think Ted Williams is. When you look at guys like Larry Bird or Bill Russell, guys from the Celtics, I think you could find three. If you look at icons, you could think of just three Celtics. But I agree. To be honest with you, I think Tom Brady is in the top three. And I'm not going to think of the top two off the top of my head, but I'm putting Tom Brady there.
Well, Bobby Orr always comes up. But what I was going to say is that I think what the problem is, well, not the problem, but this has been an argument that I get, is that when you're calling a franchise, the New England Patriots. It takes the Boston out of it.
They're not even in Boston. They're in Foxborough.
No, I understand. It's outside of Boston. Not really in Boston. But I'm saying if you're categorizing it as New England, you're basically saying it's like the California Angels versus Los Angeles Anaheim. You see what I mean? So I wonder if that hurts him at all as far as being something that is completely beloved. You know, if it was a Boston Patriots, Boston people are prideful. Maybe they might have a little bit more affection for him if it was called the Boston Patriots.
What do you think about that, Neil?
See, here's my take on the situation. I think that Bill Belichick is a bigger sports icon in Boston than Tom Brady, because Tom Brady is a offshoot / byproduct of Bill Belichick and his mentality and his coaching strategy. I think that
I think it's the other way around. What was Bill Belichick?
I think it's the other way around. It's the other way around. It's the other way around. I agree. It's the other way around.
I think if you have a different coach implemented there, I don't know that. I mean, they work well together, and Tom Brady's definitely a confident dude.
Yeah.
You know, you could see that. They had that special about Tom Brady. You could see from day one as a rookie, he's going up to the owner, he's shaking his hand.
I hate Tom Brady, and I hate Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
So I have no you know, horse in this race. I just think that
Bill Belichick
is more of a product of Tom Brady.
I feel like Bill Belichick can do no wrong in Boston. He really can't. He's making some really jackass moves up there. If you're not a Boston fan, you're looking at him like he's the evil emperor. Whatever he does and says, no matter how unorthodox or unfavorable it is, and how much flack he gets for it, the Boston masses are behind him 100% because he has constructed this empire. Tom Brady is his right hand man. Tom Brady is Darth Vader to Bill Belichick's emperor.
Well, there's also one thing we got to keep in mind. There's a lot of people outside of Boston that look at that, especially with the Spygate that, you know, maybe Tom Brady didn't necessarily was a part of, that Bill Belichick sort of spearheaded, if you know, at least allegedly, you know, or at least he paid $500,000 for it. You know, that taints it a little bit. I don't know. You know,
I haven't won a championship since then. Now, let me ask you, in your time going to the bars in Boston, what was the sense there? Did they think that Brady was a top three all time? I think the old timers might be like, no way, nobody's better than Teddy Baseball and all that.
Yeah, well, you know what? You look at the town, and you know it's historically not a football town. And you know, you could say in the past, maybe in the past 10 years, it really has become one. But you know, Bobby Orr, it's a hockey town, so Bobby Orr is always in there. And just the, you know, the sense of pride that Larry brought to the table. Larry's always in there. You know, Larry's completely beloved. But then you say, okay, well, then he spent a lot of time with the Pacers over there. Does that take away from anything? I mean, Larry Bird's relatively shunned Boston. If you take a look at it, I mean, you don't see too much promotion with him. I mean, after he retired, you don't see too much of Larry around the Boston area for somebody that's like a folk hero over there. Ted Williams, Bobby Orr, and Larry Bird. I think those are the top three that I mostly hear. So.
Well, you also got Bill Russell and Red Auerbach from the Celtics dynasties of yore.
Bill Russell's got to be in the top three. I mean, the guy, the amount of championships he won, he to me is the only no doubter is Bill Russell.
Yeah.
Well, he looks like Morgan Freeman according to Stephanopoulos.
Yeah.
Well,
you got to throw Oil Can Boyd in there too.
Well, he's big down here for what he did for the Mets.
I think time will tell, because right now Brady's fresh in the mind. I think once he leaves football and once you get some historical perspective on him, we'll see where he pans out. I mean, he's from a numbers standpoint, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever lived, if not the greatest. But in terms of, you know, like you said, is he going to be a Larry Bird that leaves the area, doesn't embrace it? And
of course he will.
I think he's not going to. Yeah, he's going to pull Larry Bird and be out of there.
Yeah.
And he's going to lose some of that luster, whereas a lot of the other guys stick around and make a difference.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's a great call. We love to sit there and debate the greatness of the Patriots. I love nothing more than talking about how great the Patriots are. Thank you, whoever you are. I really appreciate it.
The Greatriots.
All right. Well, keep listening, brother. We got another caller on the line. I'm pretty sure this is my former co-host, Big O. Oh, are you with us, brother?
I mean, I got to listen. I'm calling about the Raiders, and I got to listen to this guy tell me about the Patriots when their whole dynasty started because of the Tuck rule. Are we forgetting about that Charles Woodson blindside sack, which should have propelled the Raiders?
All that's going on in the world of sports, in the world of football in particular, you now have to deal with the fact that the last time you guys go to the Super Bowl, the fix was on? They were the Black Sox?
And Jamarcus Russell's making a comeback, but that's another story.
Yeah,
I mean, first of all, anyone that's ever heard me talk anything about the Raiders, you've made fun of me many times. I don't know if Tony's there today. Tony's made fun of me. Is Tony there?
Oh, Tony D's here. He knows.
You guys know. I have told you over and over. Mike T, you know, he always made fun of me. Tim Brown is a zero. Go back to the tapes. That guy is a zero. Name me a wide receiver in the history of football at any level, that is complaining that the game plan, which was to throw the ball a lot, was not ideal. Name me a wide receiver that doesn't want the ball.
How much do you miss Angry O being on the show every week? I mean, this is the Angry O, and I love it.
Insane. This guy is complaining that they said they were going to run the ball, and they decided to throw the ball. Their quarterback was the MVP of the NFL. He was the most valuable player, and he had Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, two Hall of Famers. And you know how many – you know what? I went back to check. You know how many catches Tim Brown had?
How many did he have?
He had one catch for 9 yards. One. He couldn't even get a garbage time good catch.
Yeah, they were down 20 points.
They were down 20-3.
Sitting in his basement watching old Raiders film and just logging all of Tim Brown's catches.
Listen, I Mike, you know for years, I've always told you, way before this ever came out, Tim Brown is the king of the, like, he's a lamb slayer. He'll put up a good game, but then you'll look on a third down and it'll be like, oh, just out of the reach of Tim Brown. Like, he never made a big catch. And everyone liked him. And Oakland wasn't really that good for a long time, so no one really cared. But he is one of those receivers, like a good wide receiver, you want to get him the ball. He never made the big catch. Even in that game, Jerry Rice had like 5 or 6 catches, had a touchdown. He had like a 45-yard catch, I think. Tim Brown did nothing. And he's telling me that they sabotaged. Why would an NFL coach sabotage a game? For what reason?
Yeah, it wasn't even for financial gain. It was because he was friends with John Gruden. He just was buddies with
them. Why did he get to the Super Bowl?
They didn't want to be there. He didn't want to be in Oakland.
But then why did he get to the Super Bowl?
Exactly. None of it makes any sense, and I don't understand why Jerry Rice is going along with it. I'm a little upset about that. He's tarnishing his own reputation, in my opinion.
Well, the thing about Jerry Rice, great player. He produced all the time. But that guy, all he did is complain. I remember him complaining that he should have won Super Bowl MVP, that Joe Montana got too much press. That guy was never happy. And he even admits, he was saying, like, yeah, I know, you know, Callahan and I never get along, but I think he sabotaged it. And then he went on to blame Callahan for Barrett Risley's, for what's his name, Barrett Robbins' mental
meltdown?
Breakdown.
Yeah, he had a meltdown.
I mean, you're not only are you blaming... Are you blaming the Super Bowl loss? You're blaming someone's actual mental stability on the coach?
Yeah. You know, Neil, before the show, we were talking about this a little bit, and he said, like, you know, the game plan might have been we're going to run the ball, but when your center is in jail or wherever he was.
For hulking out and losing his mind and being someone else for about 48 hours.
Not only that, but if you go back to it, the argument is this. The argument is what? That they had a game plan for, you know, a week and a half or, you know, 5 days or whatever it was, and then 2 days before, 3 days before, they changed it, right? The original game plan, that, according to Tim Brown, is that they were going to run the ball a lot, right? So maybe at some point, the reason that was a game plan was they were saying, Callahan's like, listen, Gruden knows all our plays. We got to do something different. And then maybe at some point he said to himself, you know what? We got the MVP of the league. We got two Hall of Fame wide receivers. We got Charlie Garner, who's as good out of the backfield as anyone in the league at that time. Why are we – we're the number one offense in the league. Why are we letting them dictate to us what we do? Let's go back to what we know how to do.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with a good thing. I mean, why would you mess with something that works so well for you and got you to that place in the first place?
Exactly. Not only that, I agree. Now, listen, it clearly didn't work, so maybe he was wrong to do it. But you can't tell me – it wasn't like he decided, like, you know what? Instead of Rich Gannon throwing, where he's just going to do quarterback sneaks, it wasn't like he did something that was crazy. He just had a different philosophy. Maybe it was the wrong philosophy, but it wasn't crazy. He's got two Hall of Fame wide receivers, and one of them had one catch. And he's like, well, you know, the reason we lost was because, you know, we threw the ball a lot. Well, it was 3-3 after the first quarter, and they were down 20-3. Should they have still run the ball in the third quarter?
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's like the age-old question. You know, when you have, like we talked about going into the NCAA championship game, you know, is it going to be Alabama adjusting their game to meet the strengths of Notre Dame, or are they going to say, you know what, these are our strengths, let them stop us? And that's what every coach goes through in every big game. Are we going to adjust what we do to counteract what they do well, or are we just going to accentuate what we do well? And it looks like Callahan said at the end of the day, this is what we do well, this is what got us here, we got the MVP, we got these studs on the outside, let them stop us. And they stopped him, and that was the thing. But it said that it was a fix is insane.
Let's also keep in mind that Tampa Bay, that defense for Tampa Bay was one of the best defenses the league has ever seen
in a single season.
I mean, we're talking like 85 Bears stats.
Yes.
No, of course. And not only that, to Neil's point, you know, Barrett Robbins, you know, was not just like a player. He was an all-pro center. He's making all the calls. And now that guy's gone. So no matter what, at some point, you know, your running game's clearly not working. So you're like, you know what? I know I have the MVP of the league as my quarterback. And if you watch those interceptions, they were awful interceptions. That has nothing to do with, like, a game plan. That's just a bad play. Like, at some point, it's just the player's fault. Is it Callahan's fault that Tim Brown couldn't catch the ball? He had one catch.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, bro.
I'm angry. I'm sorry, guys. I'm coming on to your show. I'm angry. You know.
You got 10 years of pent-up frustration coming out.
The Mets are going to stink. The Raiders are awful, as I told you.
Can we get to the Mets quick while I have you on? I was going to bring it up to 5-10, but while you're on, nobody made a big deal about this. In my opinion. Maybe they did, and I just didn't hear it. But Delmon Young just won the ALCS MVP. Young. Now, the guy, we're not saying this guy's a world beater, but the guy did have 18 home runs last year. You know, he could clearly hit 20 home runs in a season. He signs on for a one-year – yeah, I'm going to get to that. What Neil's laughing at, too. He signs on for a one-year deal worth $750,000 in Philly, and the Mets didn't want to give him a shot? I mean, the Mets have no outfielders. They won't want to – they're going to give $2 million to Scott Harrison. They won't give $750,000 to Delmon Young?
Now, listen, I'm going to say something, and I know you're not going to believe me, and you're going to roll your eyes.
I'm already rolling.
But is it possible – that the reason that the Mets did not go after this guy is because he has a history of hating on Jewish people in New York, and the Wilpons are Jewish?
Oh. I actually thought not because the Wilpons are Jewish, but because there's such a strong – I actually did think this because I'm racking my brain as to why it would be. And the anti-Semitic things that got him arrested –
the Hasidic Jew night is like one of the most popular nights.
There are a lot of Jews in City Field, I can tell you that.
Every day, and it's a huge part of the fan base and all of that. But you know what? Then to me, that's not enough to not bring him in, to be honest.
You know he's going to be a Met killer. I mean, that's for sure.
I'm telling you, he's going to be in that park, and I know they brought him in. Originally, there was reported he's going to be like a fourth outfielder competing for a spot, and then one of the Philly beat writers says that he's going to be starting in the opening day. Like, they are bringing him in here to start. He's going to be in that ballpark. He's going to put up numbers. He's going to have 25 home runs. He's going to be Pat Burrell against the Mets. He's going to destroy them.
I don't know why he didn't get you. You made a good point. What'd you tell me Johnny Gomes makes?
Johnny Gomes got 2 years, $10 million.
Yeah, how come? I mean, Delmon Young is good, and he's proven in a few years that he loves big games. So I'm surprised that maybe people just don't think he stays focused for a full year. I don't know what his deal is.
He's got a ton of baggage. I mean, I think he kicked an umpire. He threw a bat at an umpire. I mean, this guy's got a ton of bags. He's got issues in his head. But to him to make $750,000 is insane to me. I mean, Shane Victorino got 3 for $39.
Yeah.
I saw Brendan Ryan. He hits $194. His arbitration case was $3 million. Now, how is that possible? And then Delmon Young's making $700,000.
I just have no idea how the world works. That's why I was talking about last week about Michael Bourne coming to the Mets. And at the beginning, the speculation was he was going to command a $100 million deal, and now he's still out there. And I'm like, if he's available for a reasonable amount of money over a short period of time, the Mets have to make a play for him. If it's something, you know.
Yeah, I heard that there was chatter about that today again.
What's that?
There was chatter about that today. You really think that's happening?
I think that it could happen. If you're going to get him, I think he's a very productive player. He's when you know the initial reports that he was going to be commanding, you know, 5 years, $90 million were completely insane. But and I thought, you know, to me, if I'm the Red Sox, I'd rather have Michael Bourne for three for 39 than Shane Victorino.
The problem is Mike.
He's still out there. He's a productive.
And Neil knows this, and I'm sure Tony will agree, but, Mike, you're so much of a homer, you don't realize that Michael Bourne will sign, and within 5 days will pull his hamstring, and he won't play a day from it.
But that's not Michael Bourne. That's anyone the Mets will sign will stay.
Yeah.
Please give us something to talk about. We got to run, because we got a guest coming up. Heartbreak. But thanks for calling in, buddy. Keep listening, and keep up the good fight with the Raiders. And talk to Mike T. I'm sure Mike T, at least call him and say, Mike T, I was right about Tim Brown.
Yeah. And Tony, good luck with Manti Te'o. Enjoy him for a 10-year career.
That's the great Big O calling in, just breaking things down. Just fantastic call again. I don't know. We got a guest coming up. And you want to just talk quickly about the NFL a little bit?
I just say this. You can get a real girlfriend in Buffalo. You can get a real one. I don't know about looks-wise, but they're all real in Buffalo. Ain't no catfish in Buffalo.
It's
cold for catfish.
Yeah, it's too cold. Those girls, I mean.
Well, the funny thing about Te'o is now the reports that the Giants are talking to him. They're interested in him.
Well, I heard that they said, what was the term that they used? They just said need more information. That's what
I heard.
Jerry
they started a fake Twitter account, and they've been tweeting at him, you know.
He's like, I'm dating Eli Manning now. Me and Eli Manning are dating. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Here's the thing. We talked about last week whether it was going to hurt his draft status. You got a little extreme and said he wasn't going to get drafted. I thought I was heated.
I admit, I was a little heated.
No, I was like, he's going to slip. I think that
I don't even think he's going to slip now.
He's going to be top 10 still?
I think he's been playing the victim card pretty hard, and I think that now that he's slowly admitting everything one by one by one, until it comes out that if this is like and now that we've had a chance to process the whole thing and absorb it and digest it or whatever, you know, people are not really that upset. They can't be that upset at him unless there's like a Mitt Romney moment where they have like there's leaked audio of him at a press conference where he's like
or pictures of him making out
totally
with
hosing everyone. Like,
here's the thing. Well, I think it's so we know where his draft stock was because. Whatever you think of Mel Kiper, he is like the end-all, be-all, and he's the draft guru.
Yeah,
he had him the day of when the story broke, number 8. I'm just saying, I don't believe anything he says. But here's one. So if he goes, number 8, there's my little pumpkin walking into the studio, my little daughter. Who's,
little dazed, a little confused.
She doesn't know what's going on. But so he was at number 8, according to Mel Kiper. I think we just judge by where he goes. And if he drops. But we're going to get back to Manti Te'o in a little bit. Joining us on the 99 Bottles Hotline, we have a great guest. We prefaced it a little bit earlier on in the show. Writer for the Connecticut Post, covers high school sports. Great writer. Got to follow him on Twitter. Sean Patrick Boley. Sean, are you with us?
Excuse me. How's it going, guys?
Very good. Thanks for joining us. How's everything going with you?
I'm in Austin. I had a big high school football season behind me, and now I'm just kind of monitoring things, watching all the local hoops and hockey going on, and trying to keep an eye on that. And I'm taking it easy. It's been a really long fall and early winter for me, so taking it easy now.
Well, so how long have you been covering high school sports in Connecticut?
About 13 years, maybe a little longer. 13 years as a professional, but I think maybe like. If you want to go back, maybe like 14, 15, you know, and I grew up here. I grew up just outside New Haven. So, I've been around for a while. If you want to say, really, you can push it to 20 years. I mean, I've been involved in doing this kind of stuff, but professionally about 13.
So you just missed my illustrious high school career, quarterback at Norwalk High. Unfortunate for you because, I mean, you can go back to some archives, Sean. I was quite the talent there at Norwalk High. As Tony,
I went to what was the air.
So, but I do have a couple questions. I follow New Haven sports pretty closely, and obviously they got some storied
programs up there. You got, you know, Hyde is always good year in and year out. I know they got beat up in the States this year, but they're always very good. You got Hill House up there. And I want my first question I want to ask you, speaking of like New Haven, and obviously they have a big rivalry, you know, Hill House, Silver Cross. What would you say number one high school rivalry? Sounds like you're in New Haven right now. I hear this.
I live in Hamden, right near the border. And every so often we get these, you know, I live in Hamden Hall, if anyone follows, like, the FAA stuff. But I will just repeat the question, sorry.
So what would you say the number one rivalry in high school football in Connecticut is right now? I mean, for us, obviously, Norwalk and McMahon is the biggest deal, but I'm sure you leave and nobody cares about that.
And yes, Mac, I don't know about overall. Is there a really great rivalry overall? You know, I'm going to rack my brains here for a minute. I mean, there's so many good ones. But, you know, the really great ones haven't had really good success in the last few years. You want to talk about the ones that have been going on for years, like, you know, your Ansonia's and Naugatuck's. Ansonia's been dominating that one. Or you talk about, like Hamden and Notre Dame. That really hasn't done great over the years. The teams have both been up and down. They can't seem to get two great teams together. You know, obviously, New Canaan Darien is huge. Although, finally, you know, New Canaan Darien, finally, Darien won after, like, what was it, 12 years or 10 years of getting beat up by New Canaan. So, eventually, they would put that rivalry back in court. The sample to Canada on that is obviously is huge, has become huge. They just started, you know, really turning that up the last few years once Staples became a state power. And, and then they put it on Thanksgiving, and it's just exploded. Every year it seems like they play for the FCX championship on that date. What else? There's some really good ones. I mean, Benel Nosik is always a good one in the SWC, and I'm saying every school seems to claim that, you know, their rival is the biggest one. But, you know, going out beyond that, you know, you have New London and NFA and, you know, Stonington and Westerly. Those are the ones that have been around the longest. But, you know, locally, I think Duquesne and Greenwich and Staples, and those are the best ones.
And the New Canaan and Darien, I mean, I like to call it the hedge fund bowl there with those two towns playing. But, yeah, they always – I mean, it's amazing that those programs, though, are always good. I mean, they're smaller communities. It amazes me, and I kind of want to ask you that as, like, a broader question. I mean, growing up in Norwalk, we got a big talent pool to choose from. And Coach Ireland comes on the show a lot. We had a lot of players from Norwalk High has been on the show over the last couple of years, Tomar Joseph, Gilarujo, to name a couple. But it's amazing that those programs are just instilled programs. You know they're going to be good. I mean, New Canaan is not going to be 2-9 next year. And even though they have a smaller pool to choose from, for a guy like Coach Ireland who had such great success in his first year, obviously had a tough season this year. I mean, what's the difficulty for him to build a lasting program in a town like Norwalk?
Norwalk is, you know, it's had its history. It's just a matter. I mean, it takes a lot of things. First of all, as a head coach, it takes a tremendous amount of time and effort, and for Sean, you know, that's obviously, you know, I mean, he's got a family, and that's obviously really, really tough. And that's to find guys that were willing to put in that kind of commitment that it requires. I mean, we're talking like, you know, like every day of every month of every year. You have to, you know, have some hand in what your football program is doing and what your kids are doing and, you know, and how they prepare and weight rooms and, you know, also dealing with colleges and things like that. And guys who are able to do this these days, it just seem like they're few and far between. We have so many vacancies in Connecticut this year. We have 20 right now, you know, and the most common thing I've seen from that, why these guys leave, is mostly family consideration. You know, their families come first, and it's really, really hard for them to maintain the high level that you need to be successful. I mean, there aren't very many successful programs. I mean, they're mediocre ones, but the ones that are really up top are the ones, you know, and obviously it puts a lot of hard work into it. So, you know, in order to do that, you need a perfect storm, and, you know, you need to put your entire life into it. And then after that, it's just getting the kids to believe you, getting them to believe that where the program might have been in the past is not where
it will be in the future. You need to get them to believe. You need to win a game. You need to get these kids to believe in the program and believe that their hard work is paying off. And, you know, if it doesn't do that after a while, you know, if you have a good year, maybe 6-4, and the next year you go 4-6, and the year after that you go 2-9, you know, people are – the kids, you know, they're like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And I don't know. I'm working as hard as I can. I lift every day, and we just don't seem to get better. And that can really tear a program down. It's just a matter of, you know, you got to maintain that success. And, you know, in Norwalk and McMahon situation, I mean, both of the teams have been very competitive over the last 2 years. I mean, but it just, you know, you look at McMahon, for example, it doesn't show up on the record. You know, they're a really good team. It just doesn't show up in the record. And it's got to be hard for AJ Albano and, you know, and Sean had his great year last year, and then they kind of took a little bit of a step back this year. So it's just a matter of, you know, you got to build off it, and getting to that next step is probably one of the hardest things to do. So that's about the short of it. I mean, you know, once you get a ball rolling, forget it. I mean, you know, the kids always believe, they build a tradition, and, you know, and away you go. You become a new Cannon.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the challenge, is to build on it and getting all the athletic kids at a school like Norwalk High or Brian McMahon to play football and not do something else. But I want to kind of chime in on your point about opening. Now, Pete Stokes, who coached Trinity, was my quarterback's coach at Norwalk High in the late 90s. Awesome guy. I couldn't have more respect for a guy, really, in football. He did a lot for me. I love the guy. And he coached Trinity, and they had that big win this year against New Canaan, and then it came out that he stepped down. And I don't really know the reasons for it. I assume it maybe had something to do with family considerations and all like that. But, you know, what are they going to do at Trinity? They seem to be building a legitimate program there. Do you have any idea? Have they named a successor to Pete Stokes over there?
Yeah, they named Donnie Panapata, the assistant coach, is, you know, he's another Trinity Catholic guy. He's been coaching there a few years. He was Peter Stokes' right-hand man. Peter Stokes talks about him glowingly, and he loves him as a coach and a guy. He previously had a stint at Greenwich when he was younger. It didn't end so great, and he got let go there. but now, you know, I think he's come back, and, you know, he's a young enough guy where, you know, he played at Trinity, and he knows the whole program in and out. He knows everyone there, and I think he'd be great for that program. You know, and as far as Peter's concerned, yeah, it was definitely a family purposes thing. His kids are growing up, and he wants to see them play, and he wants to kind of enjoy them. I guess he had had a heart attack a couple of years ago, so, you know, he was looking at that, and he didn't want to drive himself, you know, off a cliff, trying to, you know, make the program great. He wanted to hand it over to somebody else who maybe could put in a little bit more time. And I think he thinks Donnie's that type of guy. But as far as like going, I mean, I think that he's at that point now, Donnie. He's at the point where, okay, you had your successful year. Now what? Now, you know, maybe you get a little more interest. Maybe you get some more kids coming out for the team. You know, but again, you know, they could work all they want. And, you know, it may not be enough. They might have to take a step back. It depends on also, you know, what kind of talent you have. If you have some talented kids, then maybe they'll be able to maintain it. You know, maybe some of the new kids that are thinking about football where they probably didn't before, you know, maybe that's where their future lies. So, you know, it's just a matter of seeing what they do this year. That's a very key season in order to, you know, build upon the success of this year.
Now, I don't pretend to be an expert on high school sports, but the game I went to most of the Norwalk High games. The one guy in the FCS that impressed me the most was that running back that Trinity had. Now, I think he graduated, right? Did he commit anywhere, or he was a senior, right?
Yeah, and there were a couple running backs. Depending on which game you went to, the one everyone talks about was Shaquan Housie.
Yeah,
and he's a senior now, and you know, I've heard I don't really know what his situation is at the moment. I mean, I think, you know, he was looking a little bit of like D1, AA, maybe throw a UMass in there. And, I'm not quite sure where he's going to end up, but he was really good. And then there was also obviously the kid from Sean Brown, the kid who transferred from West Hill, who, you know, he had an up and down season with Peter, but then turned it on late in the season to really get them into the state playoffs. And, you know, as far as he's concerned, I don't know where they're going either. But, you know, I'm sure Shaquan's a great kid. And I'm sure, you know, coming from Trinity, I mean, he'll end up somewhere that's, you know, good for his education.
Now, locally, there's a guy who started his career at North High and then transferred over to St. Luke's, Noel Thomas. I know he committed to UConn, right? Did you get to watch him at all?
No, I that's the problem. I don't really get to see a lot of prep school games. But Noel, he's he's one of those guys that kind of gets out of my radar because I just don't see enough of the prep school stuff. But he's obviously talented enough where, he's going to go to UConn. There are a handful of kids who get that opportunity in the state. But I didn't see him, though, unfortunately. Where did he transfer from?
He went to North High. He started. He played a lot as a sophomore and then transferred after sophomore year.
That's right. I remember now.
Yeah,
getting back to your, that's another problem, especially in the, Stanford North. They have all these prep schools that have the ability to come in and say, hey, why don't you come to our school? The schools in Connecticut, the public schools that are in the CIAC in Connecticut aren't allowed to do that. It's recruiting, they're not allowed to. But the prep schools, the FAA, the Kings, and the, St. Luke's, they can do that all they want. So they can kind of whisper in some of these talented kids' ears, say, listen, you're going to get a great education here. And plus we really want you to play football, so why don't you come here? And they've been pretty successful, and that's obviously a big thorn in the strong side. I mean, we've seen so many great athletes come out of Norwalk over the last few years. They just didn't end up playing for the public schools.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. We had Kevin Pierre-Lewis on, who obviously is from Norwalk. He went to King Lohe with Thomas and then went up to D.C. now and is having a lot of success. Same thing with Silas Red. I mean, obviously he was one of the top running backs in the country. Could have been playing at Norwalk High. As a Norwalk High graduate, it kills me because, same thing happened when I was playing. We had a lot of talented guys. We had a guy, James Bayless, who went and played at St. Luke's. He went on to Appalachian State. So you always see those things, and it kills you. And I think that is a problem with the cities. You're going to get the guys, you're going to want to play at Norwalk High, or you want to come play at King Lohe with Thomas, and we're going to put together a tape that we're going to send out to coaches, and we have this history of producing guys that play at the next level, and it's how are you going to tell a 15-year-old kid that they shouldn't do that? It's hard to do, and it's one of the problems I know that Shawnee has, and he's always competing with,
Yeah, no, it's very, very tough, and there's not really much, a heck of a lot you can do about it. He can't really, he can't entice his kids to stay where, you just can't do it. Or I guess he could say, I don't know. It's a really, really tough situation for him, and it's hard to compete against. Again, the prep schools are pretty, they've got a great academic reputation, maybe smaller class size. You don't deal with a lot of the stuff you might deal with at a city school. It's very enticing for a family to want their kid to go there. And as it showed, I mean, people don't say a lot about the FAA as far as like competition wise, but hey, what the heck, if Silas Red can go there and thrive and get a scholarship to Penn State, then what's the difference, obviously to be successful in the FCAC and the public schools, you got to have some talent. And Sean and Norwalk and McMahon have had their share over the years, but they had some of those guys. I mean, forget about it. They would be contending for titles every year. So, maybe they just need one of those guys to stay home, maybe one or two, maybe one thing to go their way, and maybe they can, build something.
Sean, this is Neil. I just wanted to get your take on if there were any other commits for this year that you have your eye on that you think will excel in the next level.
Oh man, which area are we talking about? Our region?
Well, just all really.
All over. Next level our best players, and I'm looking at the list of people who have committed verbally. Let's see. Obviously, the quarterback for up in Middletown, Xavier, Tim Boyle, he's going to Boston College next year. The linebacker from Hand, Matt Walsh, he's supposed to be really good. He's going to UConn. You have those two guys are two of the best players in the state this year. Let's see who else. There's another guy going to Maryland, Andrew Isaacs from Manchester. And then another kid I really liked was Cole Ormsby, the defensive end from Windsor, who's, a pretty fierce pass rusher. He's going to go to UMass. And, it's pretty class from Connecticut this year. Every so often we have a really, really good one. But we have our share. If you guys remember Shane Nassahouse, he's going to Temple, the Greenwich linebacker from 2 years ago. And then you have Todd Stafford from Brunswick, he's going to UMass. and then Noel Thomas from St. Luke's. And then, you know, it's not a great, great class, but, you know, obviously there are some kids I think they're, you're going to see their names a little more often. You know, excel, like, you know, how about the St. Joseph linebacker, Tyler Matakevich, who's, you know, Big East Rookie of the Year from Temple. Pretty amazing. He got, you know, what do you do? Start his fourth game of the season. And, you know, next thing you know, he's, you know, he was an All-American freshman, for crying out loud. So,
yeah. Now, I mean, I don't want to age myself here, but a guy I played with in high school, Dwayne Lofton, his son actually went to Fairfield Ward, Devin Lofton, running back. I think he was all FCAC first team. He went up to prep school up in Maine, Brigington Academy, whatever it was. And I know he's looking at and did very well. He's looking at Wagner out in Staten Island and Central Connecticut. So he's going to go and play, you know, pretty big time college football himself. So you do see guys that go, you know, prep school afterwards, and he was great. I mean, I don't know if you got to see him play, but Devin,
yeah,
and I knew him
last year. He was really good. Unfortunately, the game I saw him play, and he got cramped. And they were on their way to beating Darien, and he got cramped. And he basically missed the entire second half, and it killed him, and Darien came back and won that game.
Yeah, I was at that game with Wayne. Yeah, I remember it very well. Yeah, and I remember that game. They could have won that game.
Yeah, that would have been a really – talking about, you know, getting that big signature win that kind of propels your program forward. And I don't think Fairfield Ward really ever recovered from that. They were kind of up and down the rest of the season. I think they finished maybe 5-5 or 6-4, and then this year they really did not do well at all. I mean, he was a good talent too, so that's kind of the thing you need. You need some luck in addition to having some good players. But
well, Sean, I appreciate you coming on. I got to tell you one last thing. Now you obviously have a relationship with Sean Ireland, coach of the Norwalk Bears. You got to ask Sean. I mean, locally it's known as the Immaculate Reception. It was my first completion as a sophomore. Shawnee was a senior. So it was 1996 homecoming game. I come in garbage time, and we're playing Fairfield winning, but by, you know, like 47-0. And my first completion is to Shawnee Ireland, and he's in there playing tight end. He's like one of the only seniors still playing. And, I mean, the way I remember it, it was a perfect spiral. Shawnee might have a different opinion on it. But we talk about this, like, every time we're at the pub or whatever, you know, talking about the Immaculate Reception. So, but it was a great – so I finished my sophomore season 1-for-1 for about 8 yards. Shawnee got tackled by about 17 Fairfield High players. And we talk about it every day. It's like one of those things. And that's kind of what makes high school sports so great. You know, we do a show from O'Neill's every year where we bring back Norwalk High alumni. Done with the Alumni Association. And, you know, every time you see somebody – I mean, Tony Diorio is our producer here. He went to Brian McMahon. We'll still tell stories about times we played each other. And so it's one of those things. You play high school football with somebody or against somebody, and it's like a bond you have you can never break. So I'm sure you see that every day covering it.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be a thrill.
Oh, yeah, no, you definitely do. You know, I mean, I played football briefly until I got recruited away by the high school track coach to run cross country, and that didn't work out. So, but, I mean, I played football. I went to Amity in Woodbridge. And it was freshman year, and I loved doing it. And there's so many stories. You know, we went 0-10, I think, or 0-9, or whatever. We got heads kicked in. But some of the great memories I have from that season, freshman season, 1990. I'm going to date myself. That was 1990. And I remember some of the best stuff was when we scored it took us like 8 games to score our first touchdown. And, you know, then we scored 2 more, but the first touchdown was against North Haven. And I remember we went nuts. We went crazy. It was like a long touchdown run, and we were like absolutely crazy on the sidelines. I remember the North Haven freshman players coming up to us, basically giving us a pat on the back saying, "Congrats, guys. That was great. Good job." So, yeah, I mean, no matter where you play, no matter how far you go, you know, you get a group of guys together and you end up, you know, going through the trenches, so to speak, you know, especially in a game like football. You have that camaraderie, that bond, and, you know, it's a very, very special thing. And I wish I kept on with it because I do love the sport. So, there's some things that, you know, no matter how well you do, you always keep those memories with you for the rest of your lives.
Exactly. You never remember the times you did horribly. They remember the good times, like the touchdowns and all.
Those are some of the best times, though. Even though you do horribly, you know, those are some of the best things that you can laugh about that. Laugh about all the craziness. And, you know, even the good plays, you can laugh about. But some of those bad times or when you make crazy plays are, you know, some of the best stories.
I agree with you, Sean. Well, Sean, I really appreciate you coming on, and obviously you're welcome to come on anytime you want. When high school football season comes around, we'd love to get your input on things. We love, you know, realistically, 2 years ago we had high school players on all the time, Coach Island on every week, and our ratings went up, our listeners went up, and then geniuses that we are, we didn't do it that much this year, and our ratings suffered. So we'd love to have it because people always want to hear about high school sports. So anytime you want to come on, you're always welcome.
Absolutely. Okay, hit me up during the fall season, and it'd be fun to talk shop with you guys again. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. That's Sean Patrick Boley, writer for the Connecticut Post. Here's a round of applause. You can check him out on Twitter. Tony's probably been setting that up all day. That's why he's a great producer.
You didn't hear him practicing before he came on?
I didn't know what that was. I don't know what that was. I thought it was just me. Like, I was making good points in our pre-production meetings.
Like a group of SEALs.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm really making good points here. But that's Sean Patrick Boley. Writes great stuff. If you like high school sports, you got to follow him. Follow him on Twitter at SPBoley, SPBOWLEY. Follow him. He's got a ton of followers. He doesn't need our help, but that's a great spot. You know, he always like. I mean, you like talking college. You high school football. You were a legend in Cranberry,
and,
New Jersey.
And you know, and speaking of horrible moments that I'll always remember, getting blindsided in the last game of the year, fumbling, and having a fat defensive lineman return it 90 yards for a touchdown.
Well, that's how you ended your career?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? That's how I ended my career. Well, you talked about the bad moments, and just one more story before we get back to NFL and stuff. Like one of my best friends, Larry Anastasia, he coaches the freshman team at Norwalk High. He was a guard on the Norwalk High team that I played on. My very first start was against New Canaan. New Canaan was very good. And this guy, Bob Lynch, who went on to play Division I somewhere. He was really good. And we played at New Canaan, and over, he kept sacking me. And over, the guy on the announcer would say, "Big Bob Lynch," with the sack. Me and Larry are still talking about it. And Larry's blocking him, you know. He was playing defensive tackle. Larry's blocking him. And he was always picking dirt and grass out of my helmet. And he would see me sometimes be like, "Big Bob Lynch." And so, like, you always remember the bad stories, too. So it's pretty awesome. But let's get back to the NFL quick, and then we'll get to some other stuff. But we didn't get a chance to talk about the Ravens game itself. I mean, they're 10-point underdogs. You look at what it is.
Who's setting that line, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, it went down to 7.5. It opened at 10. It went down, I think it closed at 7.5 or 8. But still, over a touchdown. And I agree. I mean, I'm telling you, the Ravens are going to win this game.
Yeah.
They just feel like they are down. That people were down on them because of that little bad streak they had. And this season is paralleling the Giants season from last year.
Yeah.
I mean, hand in hand.
Yeah.
Great start. Lull, big win towards the end of the year when the Giants beat the Jets on a big play, and then they like that kind of like sparked them to just run through. And same thing that happened when the Ravens beat the Jets.
Yeah, and rallying around a murderer.
Well, yeah, the guy
that happened last year, right?
He didn't murder anyone.
Oh,
he never murdered anyone.
Right.
We know that. Nobody thought that he stabbed the guy.
Yeah.
He just was around a bunch of guys who stabbed the guy.
Yeah.
Guys got stabbed.
He might have held the knife for a little bit.
You've never been around a guy who might have stabbed somebody?
Yeah.
You grew up in New Jersey. In Norwalk.
Not with a knife.
I have a cell phone full of people I know that stabbed. So
listen, it's after, 9 o'clock? We're allowed to crack.
It is. This is when we really let our hair down.
This is CSG after dark.
This is when we stop taking calls. But, I mean, it's been a great story what the Ravens have done, and we talked about storylines going into the playoffs, talking about it before the playoffs.
Just making one plays.
One of the storylines was obviously the Joe Flacco thing. He said he was elite going into the season. I'm done. I don't even think we should ever talk about the top 10 quarterbacks anymore, because the bottom line with quarterbacks is, you look at Drew Brees this year.
Just say you're elite and then you win the Super Bowl.
You win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, you don't
you don't necessarily – there's not a guy like this guy will win every year. You do have the Peyton Mannings and the Tom Brady's that are always in the mix of the – we could just say right now there's three ridiculously good quarterbacks in the league right now with Peyton Manning. Probably more than three, but you could say, you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, probably Drew Brees can get in there. I mean, Drew Brees had 43 touchdowns, almost 5,200 yards, and people talk about how he had a bad season.
I think, and I'm going to get a lot of criticism for this.
Guff.
But
we say guff on the air after nine.
Yeah. It's a hard guff. That was a hard guff.
Yeah.
When he's healthy, which is never, Ben Roethlisberger.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Repeat that statement.
When he's healthy.
Yeah.
Which is never.
Ben Roethlisberger. I'm sorry. I thought you said you would never be. Oh, I think, yeah, I agree with you. I'm a huge Ben Roethlisberger fan. I was listening to it the wrong way. I thought you said that he was not elite. I mean, he's another guy.
I thought you were
going to
pull Ray Lewis right there and stab me, or at least watch Tony stab
me. Dude. Oh, it's great tonight. We can bring him right back, Neil. Yeah. Don't get too cute over here, because your seat is slow. You already have this blossoming comedic career. You don't need us.
And you just want to squash it.
I just want to ruin it. I just want to ruin it, but... you know, the takeaway to me from that game is the way the Patriots handled that loss. To me, you have Tom Brady with the slide earlier in the game,
which that was, I don't get that at all.
The guy is like we talked about earlier when the anonymous caller from Newark, whoever he was, called in from and talking about Boston sports. Like he's, you know, is he elite? Like in Boston, they won't even think of that. Oh, yeah, that's just him playing hard nose. The guy slid, which makes everybody else pull up, and then he kicked the guy. He should get fined for that hit. I know they were talking about he should definitely get fined for that. More than other like a other hit, because this is like...
I heard they were Uggs cleats.
They probably were. and it was probably some endorsement thing where he's going to make more money than
that's
he's going to
be a commercial during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I like to spike my defenders.
How do you spike your guys? With Uggs.
With Uggs cleats.
I mean, he came cleats high into a slide when...
Ed Reed was literally jumping over him, trying to avoid like any kind of contact. He just stabs him in the thigh with his foot.
Cleats high. That happened.
Yeah.
And there's not like...
That's just gritty football, Michael.
Yeah, right. A slide is the least gritty thing you could do. It's saying, oh, no, don't hit me. But I'll kick you. Don't hit me. Ooh, but I'll kick you.
Yeah. It's the art of war. The Trojan horse. I'm telling you.
And it's like Braveheart.
And that's all Belichick, too. I bet they practice that, too.
I guarantee it. It's like Braveheart when they let them charge until the last minute. He's going, hold, hold. And then they stick up the spears and they stab them the horses. Stuff. And they're like, you're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Wait, you were standing there. I was supposed to run over you with my horses. I don't know. I think that was weak. And then the fact that Belichick comes in and doesn't give an interview and does all that, and he gets away with it over and over and over. But yet the Jets are these big scumbags and all that. You know, it's just like it's amazing that Belichick gets this pass. And he'll get ripped for like a minute.
Yeah.
And then they'll go back to saying Belichick's this genius and all that.
Yeah.
That is, you know, Shannon Sharp was right. And Shannon Sharp to me.
That's the only sentence I've ever understood Shannon Sharp say in my life.
I can't take my eyes off his big tie. Like he ties a legitimate tie.
He goes to the big and tall shop and he says, double it.
Double it.
You know that Windsor knot?
Keep wrapping that Windsor knot until it just engulfs
my
neck.
I want a round the world knot.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the one of the times. I'm not a huge Shannon Sharp guy. I think he makes some good point sometimes.
When?
When he made fun of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, that one time when he was talking about Belichick.
I'm sure there's other times.
It's like that debate scene in old school. Yeah. In old school when he's going against James Carville and he just like snaps out. He's like, oh, what happened?
He spent his whole career like that. I agree. Like he's able to get a pat, and he will get a pat. Nobody will talk about that next year when we start that season.
He's the exception to the rule. I mean, you know.
He is. And you know what I'll tell you? And I'm not – and I don't like Bart Scott. I hate him.
Yeah.
And the whole the idea that he wasn't talking to the media this year, he was on whatever that Showtime show, Inside the NFL, whatever this – and I was shocked at how good he was on that show.
Yeah.
He is definitely going to be a good analyst when he retires because he was very, very good.
breaking down.
So Bart Scott,
who I hate, like
the guy who said we needed to have a media boycott, is now going to be part of the media.
And they asked him about it at the end of the show. You know, they sit down and they really break it down. They get into the meat and of the story, and they said, "Why did you do it?" And he really was saying he made a couple good points. I thought he said that, you know, they were focusing all their focuses on personal things, and part of it, he agreed that part of it was the Jets' fault for allowing it, but they really took advantage of it. And his point was, Tom Coughlin's probably on some vacation somewhere. How come the media isn't out there taking snapshots behind the trees of Tom Coughlin doing whatever he's doing? They've taken snapshots of Rex Ryan frolicking around his fat ass.
I don't think Tom Coughlin's ever had his shirt off.
Well, but you don't even know that, though. Tom Coughlin might be a freak.
I guarantee
He might be those people that are buttoned up. You know that in your life.
Yeah,
every single person.
He's a lady in the street, and he's a freak in the bed.
Exactly. So how come we don't know about his freak in the bedside? Because they
only
want.
That's like, also like insider access. You gotta pay extra for that.
But that's what I'm saying. But they, I mean, the idea that the Post would send a reporter, pay for a reporter to go down to Dominican or wherever he was to track this, it just becomes tabloid type things. And he's like, you know, once it became that, I don't want to deal with it. So at least he was on, and I think that's a legitimate argument. That it just became, you were talking about the Jets, all you wanted to do was this gotcha type stuff, and it became Star Magazine or TMZ or something like that. And are we expected to, our guys to talk to TMZ? I mean, and that's what it became. And that's what his point was. And you could agree with or disagree with it, but at least that makes sense. It's not like some, at least it's a legitimate thing.
No, I think they need to bring in like the like Derek Jeter to talk to them and be like, give them PR lessons, like be as boring as possible.
Yeah. He is the definition of lady in the street freaking the pet. Derek Jeter is a horrible person with women and all that.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. He gives them gift baskets. He gives them laundry, a ride.
He does. He takes care of them on the way out.
You know, you've seen the DirecTV commercial?
No, I have not.
The genie? Or the genie? Yeah.
No, that's his girlfriend. The girl that's holding the sign up and stuff?
Yeah.
Oofa. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
What kind of wishes is she granting?
But there is a kind of a double standard. I'm not saying this because I'm a Mets and Jets fan.
The
media does treat the Mets and the Jets different than the Giants and the Yankees. That's just a fact.
Yeah,
they did not go
chase
around. If the New York Post chased around Derek Jeter like chased around Rex Ryan, they will find those type of pictures.
They had some comments.
Every morning they would find those pictures.
Yeah.
And they don't do it.
That they had some compromising picks of OCU Manura in the club, I think, maybe.
Maybe.
But that's also a
cool. And that's why Derek Jeter's single, because he's like, I could always find another one of these. Tony is now showing us the pictures of his new girlfriend.
Is there, her name's, what, Hannah Davis? Is that it?
Her name is?
Hannah Davis.
I'm going to guess that whatever high school she went to, she's the class of 2010. She can't be more than 20 years old, this girl.
I think she just got crowned prom queen.
She still has it. She just won it this year, 2012, prom queen of, some sort of high school in NoCal, something like that. But why don't we get into days? It's 9:07. We don't have much time left. Why don't you get into days real quick?
All right.
Break some things down.
Okay. Roger Goodell recently reinstated.
I hope you're going to
head coach. Head coach Sean Payton about 2 weeks before he said he would. And I was listening to...
Jeez!
Oh, my God!
He's good. Here you go.
I just got electrocuted, folks, on the air.
That happened to
the Bar and Grill. First death relates. All right. So I was listening to Boomer and Carton.
Yeah.
And they were talking about this, and I was like, you know what? I'm not a morning person. This is probably just me shaking off the cobwebs.
You're a champion.
Yeah, I'm probably not hearing this correctly. But no, this is a fact. New Orleans, obviously not a big fan of Commissioner Roger Goodell. They created a float, and this is TSG After Dark. So
good. This is
the
best picture
I've seen. They created a float of Roger Goodell being eaten by, and I'm going to use scientific terms, a giant vagina.
Vagina. Yeah.
I mean, this is a parade in New Orleans.
We can report this because it's been reported, and that you're, like you said, scientific term, so we're not being crass.
Yeah.
It's Roger Goodell, and in case you didn't know it was Roger Goodell, it's got his name written on his forehead.
Just in case. I think what happened was, I think he had too many hurricanes down
like
in the Nile, and they passed
like
out.
It's like a Roger Goodell, like, zombie.
Yeah, and then they, yeah, it is. Like, he definitely has the flu with the zombie virus.
So he comes out, takes a turn on whatever Bourbon Street or whatever the big street is, and you're like, oh, it's Roger Goodell. Oh, and he's getting eaten by a vagina.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is like
kind of looks like a toilet though, right? Like a vagina toilet. Like if I were to make a toilet.
Yeah. And like the back end of it.
If I were into like Cleveland Steamers.
Well, nether parts.
But the kicker,
it's amazing.
It's really well constructed.
And it's a thing
of beauty.
But that's what makes New Orleans so great. They're so proud. I mean, really,
I'm not allowed to live there.
We could talk about they have the Hornets, who are now the Pelicans.
Did you see the logo that I posted?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that. Next week, hopefully we have Nate Collins on of the Chicago Bears, who owns a clothing company with Victor Cruz, and I want to get he's got into fashion and all that. I want to know what his thoughts are of the new logo of the New Orleans Pelicans. It can't be real. Because I watched ESPN today and they didn't post it. And they said that it's going to break tomorrow. That's got to be they must have leaked a hoax. That can't be their logo.
That's got to be like let's take a look at the rough draft.
That is. You know what? There's a elementary school somewhere that had some sort of tragedy. Let's give them a project. Create a logo.
Macaroni art logo.
They gave a macaroni art logo.
All right, we're going to finger paint a logo.
Draw your hands. That's a turkey. And then give us a logo for the New Orleans.
I mean, but the kicker here on the float is that...
Oh, there's a kicker.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean...
I didn't read anything. I just saw the big stuff.
Yeah, just in case that you didn't think that a league official being eaten by a very large female body part wasn't enough.
I think that's Justin Federline walking.
That is definitely K-Fed.
Oh, was that his name?
Justin Federline, his brother? K-Fed?
I don't know who Kevin Federline. Whatever.
I do not know who Britney Spears' baby dad is.
Well, I knew his last name. His last name was Federline. And that's him. Whatever his name is, that's him.
Yeah, well, that's where I draw the Federline, okay? You got to know your Federlines, bro.
I'm sorry, dude.
Jesus. Anyway, the sign posted above the vagina toilet consuming Roger Goodell says Super Hole XL Vag. So let's just move along from that.
Please.
Don't ever live in New Orleans. That's a great place to visit. Don't stay there longer than 3 days.
No.
You won't come back.
Dave Matthews couldn't make it out of
there. I'm telling you, that place. I just saw Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Did some of it take place down there?
A little bit. And I'm convinced that town is... There are no humans in that town. That is all vampires, zombies, and werewolves.
Werewolves.
True Blood, my dude.
I haven't caught that show either.
How about this? This was on Barstool Sports, the Boston variety. Kobe, recently there was an anniversary, Kobe Bryant scoring 81 points in a game.
Yeah.
It was the anniversary of him doing that. He apparently he watched himself scoring the 81 points and live tweeted it.
Such a loser. Unbelievable.
Now...
He's such a loser.
And so I'll just run down.
Run it down.
Wait,
I'm gonna,
initial reactions, here, and then we'll go into
I don't want to see it. Now, Kobe Bryant is not a good person. Another guy, not a very good person. I have said on the show, I actually think he's the greatest Laker, ahead of Kareem, ahead of Magic. I think that's how good of a basketball player he is. I really think that as good as people think he is that good. He is... Top.
AC Green?
Mm.
That's a neck and neck right there.
Well, yeah, I didn't know you were going to bring up AC.
Are we talking virginity or are we talking basketball?
But he's a bad guy. I mean, he's an unlikable guy. And that's what's called. If he was LeBron James, who's just like bubbly, or even Jordan, who probably is a bad guy in real life, but no
probably bad guy, or is just like he embraces the bad guy.
But you know what I mean? Like, he knew how to work the media, where the media would just fawn over him.
Yeah,
the
media
is not fawn over Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
They're, like, looking to find things.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, the media is picking on him. But then he does this. I did not know about this. He does this. Come on, Kobe. I want to be your defender, dude.
How about this one?
from the other night. After the Lakers get beat, he comes home and he says, you know, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata calms me down when I'm at my breaking point. Like, bro, you're in a you really think that stage? You're in a jacket and Scully. Oh, you came right into the house and you sat right at the piano and you started playing Beethoven. Get the hell out of here!
Now wait a second. When I like to wind down, I like to put on a suit and a scarf.
And just
tickle the ivories for a little bit.
Like, really?
There has been a little bit of a winter cold freeze in L.A.
You guys take the scarf. I can't even hear one.
And who watermarks their Twitter pictures? It's at Kobe Bryant and his Twitter page. Like, nobody wants to steal that, dude. Hey, come on.
Yeah, you're not TMZ, all right? You're not World Star Hip Hop. Were you making money on that? Are you selling that exclusively to Twitter?
Awful.
So his tweets are, this is just some of his best. I can't believe I've never watched this game till now. After my first bucket, I realized their rotations weren't sharp or early, so he's kind of giving some insight. This game was the first and only game my grandma has seen me play as a pro, on my late grandfather's birthday, no less. A little insight, you know, a DVD commentary, which I think is nice. Youthful metabolism, I'm fresh of pepperoni pizza and grape soda. Dude ate pepperoni pizza and drank grape soda before scoring 81. So anyone thinks like diet might play a little factor in your game strategy and like
not
help you play?
I will tell you, I heard he's told that story before. He was on ESPN Radio or something. He said, well, they asked him about that game and he goes, well, that's something I can never do again because now he only eats salmon and like hummus or something before the game.
That's why they're losing.
Yeah.
Get back to the peps.
Exactly.
And the grape soda.
Did Mickey Mantle ever eat salmon and hummus? Mickey Mantle just did work.
He just swam in gin before going to the ballpark. But I think that the two that really nailed it for me, and this is the second to the last one, he goes, watching the game now, the easy shots that I missed, I could have had 100 points. Had 81, he said he could have 100. And then the last one, this is the kicker, down 14, I'm heating up. At this point, I wouldn't pass a kidney stone.
Did they win that game?
I don't even know if they won.
I gotta look that up and see if they won that game.
But you know things are tough in LA when he's reliving a game from years ago about how he scored 81 points. That's like when you know you've missed the playoffs. When you're like, I'm just gonna look at the good times.
He's living how I relive my high school career. And like I'm talking to this guy about this immaculate reception. I talked to my friend Kevin about my 3 touchdowns. And you're like, well, how did you do? Well, I was well under 500 as a starting quarterback, but I don't care. I mean, I'll tell you all of my great, feats as a high school quarterback. That's what I'm saying. Like, why would he be doing this? Why would Kobe Bryant do? You don't need to do this, Kobe.
Yeah,
I don't want to hear about his Black Mamba thing.
Yeah.
Like, he really is. He's just a loser. You know what it is, though, I really think? I mean, you think about this guy. He grew up a rich kid. You know, I mean, he grew up, his father was an NBA player, grew up, like, playing over there. So now he's, like, that kid who thinks he's, like, Mr. Hip-Hop guy, but grew up, you know, it's like Master P's son, whoever, you know, whatever, it's Lil Romeo, whatever his name is, wants to act like he's gangster. Like, dude, you went to private schools, and you never knew anything about a struggle in your whole life.
You don't even know where Compton is on a map.
Exactly. So you can't be, so he can't try to act that. So he's that, this is what he does. He live tweets his best game because he's so thug.
There's no way you're going to convince me that he didn't watch that game before. He's Kobe Bryant. I mean, he's so full of himself.
If he watched it live on Twitter right then,
yeah,
then he's watched it a million times.
Yeah, he had to have. That's what I mean.
But
yeah,
I'm saying, but to me, it doesn't take away from his like career. He's just a douchebag guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he's such a good basketball player.
Absolutely.
So I'll make the next two or three really quick. Michael Phelps.
We're gonna go over again. We're gonna go overtime. We're probably gonna do a bonus time here.
Christmas was in December, Mike. We can't just keep giving like this.
That's how we do it.
So Michael Phelps, he was at the Ravens game, sporting a really weird new look. I don't know if you saw that, but
I did not catch it.
Can't bring it up. It's a little hipsterish, but he has a new girlfriend now, and it's the. Quote unquote sex tape star, which that exists now. You can just make a sex tape and blow up. Jasmine Waltz. The thing is, she made the sex tape with David Arquette. So I have a couple of things I got to get out here. Like, so what is it? What is the requirements? Give me run down the bullet points of being a sex tape star. Is it just you're in one? Does it have to be a certain length? What kind of performance do you have to give? Is there, does your supporting cast have anything to do with it? Because David Arquette sex tape, to me, I'm not buying tickets. I'm going to wait for it to come out in cable.
Yeah, I would say you have to have a sex tape.
Yeah, okay.
And you have to, 1,000 people in America have to know who you are.
Okay.
So even if you're like a really popular kid in high school,
yeah,
like the prom queen could probably have a sex tape.
Okay.
And be like, I had a sex tape.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that clearly that's what it's become.
So,
but it could make you.
Follow-up question.
It could make or break you.
Follow-up question. And, you know, you've been kind of locked up for a while now. Tony D's not been locked up. I'm a single guy. If you know a girl's a sex tape star, do you still, A, hook up with her, which I say yes. Why not?
Yeah.
Just be smart about it. Wrap yourself in some kind of laxative or, like, I don't know. And B, you're going to date her. And keep in mind, you've won the most gold medals ever in the Olympics. You're the probably quote unquote greatest Olympic athlete. I don't know.
Listen, I believe.
Do you have a lot of sexual bucket list items that you just cross off and knock off?
In monogamous, you find a woman you love. There's nothing more special. That's just me. You know, that's how I live my life.
When is your next sermon?
It's just me here. I'm giving you some TSG After Dark here. This is how I am. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. And, you know, if you guys want to live that way, I'm not going to judge you, but somebody else will. Because he lives upstairs.
Oh, my God. Oh. Wow.
Why don't you got in TSG?
I got to go to church. I got to go to church.
Yeah, you do.
So we got Jamarcus Russell is attempting a comeback.
He's only 308.
305, Michael.
Oh, I got yesterday's update.
Yeah.
His weigh-in. He's basically on like.
So his playing weight was 265. World's biggest loser. Playing weight was 265. He's now 305.
He was considered overweight.
He was, yeah.
He was like, he was the hefty righty.
Yeah.
To the hefty
righty. Hefty righty. The robust righty.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you could call him that. No shot, right? This guy has no shot at making a comeback.
They talked about it on PTI tonight. And it was like the fill in the blank, like, what are your chances? And
Kornheiser, I meant to ask O about this.
Kornheiser, like, yeah, I did too, because it's like, O's a big guy, but yeah. O's lost a ridiculous amount of weight and looks great right now. Jamarcus Russell is way heavier than
Can O. We mention that it was on a bet? Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
All right.
Why not? O lost 60 plus pounds.
On a bet.
But he did it.
Yeah.
You can't take that away
and
from
then
him.
When he collected, he was like, where's Mickey D's at?
Yeah. And I'm going to spend all this money.
Me and Jamarcus are going to get some purple drink and get the Happy Meal.
I mean, the amount of pride he must have that I weigh way less than Jamarcus Russell, and he's the same height. You know, O's like 6'5",
yeah.
Big dude, weighs significantly less than Jamarcus Russell, who now is going to some camp.
Heavyweights.
Yeah.
Remember that movie with Ben Stiller? Yeah.
What was that fat camp movie with Damon Wayans when they were kids? Remember?
Oh, like Sergeant Payne. Sergeant Payne.
Sergeant Payne. So he needs to go to Sergeant Payne. He'll go see Sergeant Payne. He'll take care of him.
Major Payne.
Major Payne.
Yeah. You didn't want to give him
a
major title.
That was the sequel. Yeah.
He saw the prequel, but he was only a sergeant. Well, he's a comedian. That's what I'm saying. Where's your next act? Is this coming up? Tuesday,
January 29th, 8 p.m., Broadway Comedy Club.
That's not a plug or anything.
That's a $20 cover with a two-drink minimum. Call ahead. You got to talk to Sheba Mason.
Do you work the crowd? Are you one of those guys like, hey, first date? Great. Hey, talk about marrying up. Put a ring on that. You do those kind of things? What kind of act do you give? Do you give one of those type of deals?
No, it's just straight. It's not allowed anywhere near
children.
Just
talking, you just do the say what again?
Yeah.
Did you guys see anything about Roger Goodell and the vagina? That's what you do?
That's one big vagina.
Bong.
Bang. I got a dummy. And I got props.
You had all kinds of props.
Like carrot
smashing,
top meets.
You're smashing fruit.
Yeah. Gallagher meets carrot top.
You're like, all right, here's what I need. I need a set.
I wear a fat suit and I talk about dominating the salad bar, you know.
All impressions. I love it. I love everything about what you're doing right now. It's much more than me and Tony D are doing. What else you got, dude? This is the longest say what of all time. It it was light out when we started this thing, but I want to keep doing it. It was 50 degrees when we started it.
First of all, it's not even say what. You need to get your head shaved.
Oh, I'm in a daze. I'm sorry, daze.
And we're going to get sued by coaching company because they're doing say what now.
Sports
and
Illustrated.
Those big wigs at ESPN are going to come down and start.
Sports Illustrated stole say what, and now coaching company stole say what. We just don't have the funds to copyright them.
We can't make court appearances. I guess there's man, it's so hard to choose. I'll do this one. Screw it. There's a $50 online course on how to watch a football game. I mean, at that point, just
don't watch football.
Don't watch football. There are other sports. There are other sports.
Yeah. Simpler sports.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not much simpler than football, like watching it. And knowing, that team needs to get in that end zone.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of intricacies to it. But you don't need to really know that. That all stems from that 4G commercial where the woman's like, oh, actually it's 7 sacks or whatever. She does that move.
Yeah.
That sparked some sort of online institution.
So some guy was like, you know what? I think people are dumb enough to pay $50 for me to have like a 17-week course on how to watch a freaking football game.
I guarantee you that guy's got 10,000 people signed up for that course. You know what it is? I think the market is for that. It's the nerdy guys who want to be able to talk about things like at the office, and there's the people that come over from Europe and don't even know anything about it. Like,
yeah.
I'm in sales. I have to know a little bit about it.
Yeah.
I'll spend the $50 and learn the basics of it. We should be mad we didn't think of that.
That's actually why I included it. I was thinking we should have done that.
We could do it. Right now, even now, we'll charge $45.
Yeah.
We'll be the Walmart.
We're gonna lowball them.
We'll be the Phoenix University of, or whatever, University of Phoenix.
That's a $50 value for $25.99.
We can get down there. You have a platform now. You're at Broadway Comedy Club. That's what you should say. Plug it. Check me out.
Listen, I know you guys are expecting jokes, but I have an amazing once in a lifetime.
I got an amazing offer. You get that, you get a free nonstick frying pan.
A knife with my signature on the blade
for $31. This is as low as I can go.
And you know what?
And you already spent $20 to get into the scene.
I'm throwing a ShamWow.
Why not?
It's used, but...
Yeah, it's used. It's mine. I have a lot of them.
Yeah, so that's all I got for Say What / Dude Are You Serious /...
I mean, we're going to meld it right into
my set on Tuesday night.
I mean, if you're listening to this live, and I know we have a lot of live listeners, we're going to go overtime. So you're going to have to check out the next 20 minutes or so on our website. Check us out at www.tristatesportsguys.com. Check us out on Facebook.
That last W got you. So what's that last W?
What does?
Why does it have to be three?
You don't need three.
Give me one W. W dot.
No W.
Let's get rid of the W's.
Yeah, we got it. If you want to get to a website,
we're offering a $50 course on the first three W's.
We got a petition going. But you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys.
MySpace. Friendster.
We could get a MySpace is making a comeback. They just relaunched. There's no more pedophiles.
There's no more profiles. There's no more pictures. There's no more videos. It's just you. And a web page.
And the Tri-State Sports Guy.
And the Tri-State Sports Guy.
Teaching you about football.
We bought MySpace.
Oh, yeah. We acquired MySpace. And the Tri-State Sports Guys. But we had a great show tonight. We had a great guest. You got to check us out all the time. Next week, we had a great guest. Nate Collins from the Chicago Bears is going to come on with us. Talk a little about the NFL. He's from Port Chester, which is right around the corner from us. And he went to Kingle Hay with Thomas in Stanford. And... obviously, he's going to have a lot to talk about, which is going to be great. He has a clothing company with Victor Cruz, so a lot of people will be interested in that. I'm sure Tony D is a big fashion guru, will know all about the Young Whales clothing line. But so if you want to check us out, please, the remainder of our show on www.tristatesportsguys.com. We're going to go into bonus time right now. Tony D, you want to do some say what?
We'll go real quick here. First, I want to let everybody know that Duke, what the hell's going on with college football, by the way? Because Duke got destroyed tonight by Miami.
College basketball.
Yeah, that's
say football?
You said football. No different sport.
All right. Okay. I'm
you might not want to hear my class.
I'm sick.
Tony's got the influenza, which is ravishing our great country.
27 points Miami beats number one Duke by tonight in college basketball.
And you got Kentucky. Isn't going to make the college tournament.
Yes. Got number ones getting knocked off all over the place.
You know what? Kevin Ollie's doing work up there in UConn.
Yeah. How about this? Delmon Young.
I can't wait to hear this.
Can
I save this piece?
Can earn $600,000 this year if he makes weight in his contract. That is this. I mean, this is just unreal. So he'll receive
his base contract is $750,000. So this is like almost doubling his contract.
Yeah.
They almost want him to make weight. Like, I think it's just like a game amongst like millionaires. They're just like, let's just make the fat guy lose weight.
It says the first. It says,
isn't it like this? On the fat guy.
It says he will receive $100,000 each time he makes weight. It says the first three times he must be 230 pounds or less.
But he's only 6'0".
And the second three.
So this dude ain't 6'5".
And the second three, he has to be, we are over time.
This is bonus time, folks.
The second three times, he has to be 235 pounds or less.
Yeah.
I mean, this just.
So every time, and it's random, it's at the club's discretion, they'll just
so there's no.
Yeah, no, it's not like it's a set time, like at April 1st or whatever.
Oh,
it's just like, any time, they'll just be like, oh, you got Chinese buffet written all over you, let's get you on the scale, I'm going to save $100,000. I think there's going to be guys, I think they have guys planted in the organization that are going to be feeding him.
And try to just set him up.
Like, your job, look, I'm going to pay you $80,000 if he could fail one time.
It says, and he also is going to earn a $250,000 bonus for being on the active roster for one day and $100,000 each for 40, 80, 100, and 160 days.
So he just has to not be fat and not get arrested.
Yeah. And he'll,
That's all it is, and produce anything.
That is unbelievable.
That's not bad. No, it's a great gig. But that's what I'm saying we talked about earlier about the Mets. Like, why would the Mets not just be like, we'll just give you $2 million just to come here.
Yeah.
They're going to give Scott Harrison $2 million. And that's like a big thing. That's like their big re-signing is Scott Harrison for $2 million. Delmon Young is much better. He's a right-handed hitter. They need a right-handed bat. Uses Tucci Lumber, who sponsors our show, so we'll keep plugging them.
Yep.
Won the ALCS MVP. He's had ridiculous success in the playoffs the last two seasons.
Unbelievable.
But that's how we do it.
Yeah.
The Mets don't want that. They got Neuenheit. I mean, are you kidding me? We got him. They're probably paying him more.
You do not talk ill of Captain Kirk.
I will talk ill of Captain Kirk. He's got gray hair, which you know I like.
He's got a nice mane on
him. He's got gray hair, which I appreciate. He's part of the club, but he stinks. Go ahead.
Let's jump to basketball real quick. The Lakers say they're not trying to trade Dwight Howard yet.
Wow, that turned into a real mess.
What is going on out there in LA?
Because I was going to talk about the Nets and the Knicks a little bit later on, and part of my conversation would be Dwight Howard. We might as well jump into it now because should they trade him? They don't have him signed by him this year.
No.
He's going to command, I mean, as bad as he is, and he's been bad, he's still averaging 17 and 12.
Yep.
No, they have to actually pay
like $7 million or something like that if they dish him, don't they?
There's
a huge penalty, yeah. A huge fee they have to pay.
But it's going to be a lot less than signing a max contract. I mean, the thing with Dwight Howard right now is somebody will want him, so they can get something back for him. Because if you're a struggling team, A, he's going to put butts in the seats.
Yep.
But B, I mean, the guy could still, I mean, he's averaging 17 and 12, and he's completely lost in this offense.
Yeah, and
lost.
And
he doesn't know what's going on.
Gasol is even worse. Like, they just can't play together. One of them cannot be on the court at the same time. It's
right.
Just,
I mean, if he went to a small market team that really needs a guy, like the Bobcats, something like that,
mm-hmm.
he'll go back up to 25 and 15. I mean, the sky's the limit for him on like a bad team. But this goes back to my point that I made a year ago when the big negotiations were going on with the Nets and Dwight Howard. I'm like, I don't want this guy. I don't want him. The package that the Nets were willing to give up for Dwight Howard was insane at the time. It was like two first-rounders, a second-rounder, Marshawn Brooks, mm-hmm. Anthony Morrow, all these guys. And I'm like, I don't want him here. And now there's still talk of, well, the Nets might go out and get him now. And so they're going to have to include Brook Lopez. You get some picks,
yep.
all these things, and you're like, what are you getting? At this point, Brook Lopez, if you've watched a lot of net games, Brook Lopez, to me, is your only consistent scorer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Joe Johnson can take over a game, but he could also lose a game. Now, I've seen that guy go 3 for 20. You know, he's one of those type of guys. He could take a game against the Knicks. You know, in spurts, he's the one that won in that game. You know, he went on some little runs. He was bad for a while, but when he got hot, he got hot. He won the, you know, had a big shot at the end of the game and won the game. But I don't want the Nets, and I think, and we're going to talk about the Nets a little later. I think the Nets are a very flawed team. I don't want the Nets. If I'm a contender right now, I don't want to be breaking up anything I've got going on to get Dwight Howard.
Yeah,
because, I mean, the guy is toxic. This is a guy who was in the finals, was it 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, if he had stayed where he was and just said, you know, build around me, the Magic could be a real dynasty. And since he decided he wanted to become famous or whatever he wanted, they weren't putting the right pieces around him.
Yeah.
They've done nothing but fail. And now he's in L.A., and he's going to complain about what? The coaching? He's going to complain about his, you know, he's never going to play alongside a guy better than Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
So if you want ancillary pieces, it's never going to be better than Kobe Bryant. So shut up, Dwight Howard. I mean, he has become, we made fun of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, he's.
He's way more unlikable than Kobe Bryant because this guy doesn't even produce.
No.
Kobe Bryant has earned the right, as much as you can earn the right, to do stupid things like play the piano on in a suit and do whatever he's going to do. I mean, what are your thoughts on it, Neil?
He's trying to keep warm.
What are your thoughts about Dwight Howard in general? And then I guess we could talk a little bit more about the Lakers, too. But
well, I mean, I wrote a whole article last year defending him, saying, like, you know, he's trying to do the right thing and be the right, not pull LeBron James and all this other nonsense, but it's unraveling. Like, it's getting to a point where I don't know that he can really do anything. There's no real quick fix for him.
He could make foul shots.
Well, and not airball foul shots? Come on.
He could not airball.
You are so demanding. It's ridiculous. But he's got to hit the rim or the backboard every time he shoots at the basket.
He's a guy, if you're going to play a pickup basketball game, he would never get on the court because you always have to make the foul shot to, like, get on the court.
Yeah.
He'd be like, yo, he's the best guy here, but he can never get on the court. I mean, he'd be the dude that never makes it.
Yeah.
It's impossible. And don't give me the thing about your hands are too big. You don't think Dirk Nowitzki's got some big hands? Dirk Nowitzki's 7 feet.
This is worse than
Kevin Durant's got big hands.
Yeah. It's worse than Hack-a-Shaq at this point.
He did eke his way up. He is at 50%.
Okay.
Cut him some slack, dude. All right. He's a mediocre softball hitter, like at the free throw line. All right, Tone, what else you got?
How about this? Finish up with this. Kevin Youkilis and Jabba Chamberlain are not speaking. You know, they had problems when he was in, you know, Boston, and they didn't like each other. But apparently, Jabba must have left him a voicemail. Welcome to the club. No return phone call.
You got no time for that.
No time.
Dude, I'm not going to talk to him.
So.
My man.
I think that might be something that the Yankees need. You know, that you could
a couple of fat guys fighting each other?
Just some kind of disruption in the clubhouse to break the, like, hypnotic spell that they're all under, that everyone's doing fine, we're all getting along, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, they have the Teixeira, Jeters, the guys that always do the right thing, you know, even Swisher.
Maybe you just need a guy
anymore, but yeah, those.
But Swish wasn't the guy that would come in and disrupt the club.
Yeah, right. He was a
and stir the pot. Whereas Uke's gonna come in, stir the pot a little bit, and maybe
Gary Sheffield. Those type of guys, and maybe Uke, which I never knew Uke was. I didn't
until like until like last year, yeah.
He didn't stir the pot. I mean, I thought the way he handled his exit in Boston pretty graciously, to be honest with you.
Well, if you believe in Bobby Valentine, which I believe you do, you would say...
As much as I want to, he's a local guy.
You know, Bobby V had some choice words about Uke and how his play, you know, his effort levels and whatnot. So, I don't know. I think that...
Are we looking at a blow up of the Yankees, like a real disaster season? You got the Blue Jays getting all those acquisitions.
Think about, and this is a ridiculous analogy or whatever, but I kind of want to see the Yankees get back to the Billy Martin, Reggie Jackson days.
Where they're just throwing hands.
Where they're just like fighting on the field.
Mickey Rivers, who nobody can understand. They need a guy in there who speaks non-English, but.
Yeah.
English is his first language, but nobody understands what he's saying.
Because don't you find the current Yankees team boring?
So boring.
So boring. So why not have a guy like Uke come in?
It's just amazing that Uke is the guy that's like stirring the pot, because his whole career, up until, even if you want to grant you that last year, I mean, he was like the clubhouse guy.
It's amazing that now he's the guy. They're bringing in a spark plug, and it's Kevin Youkilis, a 35-year-old guy who was, getting replaced by Will Middlebrook.
I mean, who else on that team? I mean, Swisher was the kind of, just the chill dude who was, eccentric.
He had a great personality, but he wasn't
he was eccentric, but he's not going to, call people out or, get in people's faces. He's just kind of a energetic kind of guy.
Ray Lewis is retiring. Can we see Ray Lewis possibly in a Yankees uniform next year? They got money to spend. They got roster spots open. I wouldn't be shocked if Ray Lewis is on the 40-man roster. Just to be in there and just mix things up.
Yeah. Oh, at least the playoff roster.
He does his dance and just
listen, we'll stow you away at AAA for the whole year.
They'll bump you up.
And then when they expand,
we're not going to need Java. He'll be fat and hurt by then.
No, he won't have a face because Uke's going to tear it off.
Uke. Well, that's great. That's Tony. That's all you got?
That's all I got.
All right, we got two more little segments to go. We'll go quick on the first one. We've been trying to talk about.
We only
about
have about 15 more segments.
We'll be here till 12, folks. We'll be bringing in the new year. But this one will be quick. So we've tried to do this the last couple episodes, and we haven't gotten a chance to do
it. I don't want to do it.
Should we push it off? Should we push it off one more week? This came from Coach Sean Ireland from Norwalk, and it was a thing that ESPN put on there. Four iconic athletes started their career.
I mean, he is playing in the Super Bowl.
We got four guys, 1996, started their careers.
You're just going to plow through it. You're just going to put your shoulder down.
We got Kobe Bryant, who we've discussed tonight.
Yeah.
He's still very relevant. We got Ray Lewis, who we've discussed tonight, still very relevant.
Yeah.
But Derek Jeter, who we've been brought up several times, very relevant.
And one guy that I was going to bring up, and dude, are you serious? But I saved it because I knew.
You knew we were coming up. And that's the Tiger Woods. And so the question is, who had the most distinguished career? Who had the most? Distinguished is probably the best way to
go. Well, you have to define distinguished because I am at a third grade reading level.
Memorable, most accomplished career. Let's say accomplished career of the four guys who had the most accomplished career. And to me,
successful.
Yeah.
Authoritative.
Yeah.
Commanding great respect.
Yeah.
That might be a killer for some of these guys.
Well, all
showing dignity.
Yeah.
Or authority in one's appearance or manner. So that is, whoa.
Now, to me, number one, it's so obvious that I was thinking it almost diminished the list. But when I talked to Coach Ireland, he had this same guy third on this list. To me, number one is Tiger Woods. I mean, this guy, for the rest of our lives, you're going to talk about him as being the greatest golfer of all time. None of the other guys on the list, and I know people talk about Ray Lewis as possibly being the best middle linebacker of all time, questionably the best linebacker in general of all time, maybe defensive player, but nobody's saying that Ray Lewis is the best football player of all time. You could say the same about Derek Jeter. He might be the best shortstop of all time. He's not the best baseball player of all time. Nobody's putting him in the conversation with Babe Ruth and all that. Other than New York people who don't know about sports. And then you have Kobe Bryant, who is kind of in that conversation. People will talk, compare him to Jordan and all that. But to me, Tiger's career, I mean, you talk about the last 3 years and not winning majors and injuries and infidelities and all that. But you have to put Tiger number one of those. This is Tiger Woods. He really rejuvenated golf.
Yeah.
And really, you look at the ratings of when he's playing and when he's not playing and all of that things and when he was not playing. I mean, it's to me, he's so far and above the number one. Did you have him number one? I'm going to go one. Who's your number one?
Oh, Ray Lewis.
What? And that's the end of the Tri-State Sports Game. Thanks for that's the end of our bonus time. Thanks.
He's got to be dead.
No, I'm Tiger number one.
Tiger number one. Tony, you got Tiger number one?
No, I would say Kobe.
Kobe number one.
Put Kobe one. As much as I hate the guy, I feel like...
I think it's very commendable. You just bashed the team.
Yeah, no,
But you put him up there.
I would.
For what reason above Tiger Woods?
Just because of the things that he's done, the championships that he's won. I mean, the things he's done, you know, the fact that, you know, everybody harped on him because he was... You know, they said he got those championships that he won.
The Shaq.
Yeah, and then he went out and he just won a couple more without him. So, I mean, it's not over. Like, what if he was able to get another one, you know, another championship or something like that, then I think it automatically puts him number one. But, I mean, I would put Tiger close, a close number two. But
see, I respect, because I,
So well, this will transition number two. I have Kobe number two for that reason. I mean, the guy is one with different cast of characters. The guy came into the league coming out of high school and, you know, had his struggles early on. Everyone remembers the air balls in the playoffs as a rookie and all this stuff. But he really took over a team and dominates the team and really runs that team. And,
absolutely,
you know, we talk about the struggles and this and that, but he's still putting up ridiculous numbers at this age and with this amount of, you know, minutes on his legs. It's amazing what he's doing.
Yeah,
so he's not getting the credit of like a Jordan. And I never think he's going to surpass Jordan. And people talk about LeBron might do it. Kobe won't do it. But I really, when I said that I thought he was better, if I was in heaven 100 years from now and I said I got a pickup game and I got to pick up a guy, I'm going to pick Kobe in his prime over Magic in his prime. I'm going to pick him over Kareem and all those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is one of the top three basketball players of all time.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of things hurt him, but that's why I have Kobe number two. Neil, who do you have number two?
Jeets. I have Jeets. So I know you look like you just made a fist. And you're grinding your teeth, but I have Jeets at two, and I have Kobe at three, because I think Kobe could be, and this sounds ridiculous, but he could be so much better. I honestly don't feel like he is, he's in it to win it a lot of the time. He just has that, just from out exterior appearances, the way that he looks, the way that he acts, the way that he handles
it's
himself.
Coat.
It's the damn Scully he wore playing the piano. It's just that, I don't think, Ray Lewis almost shouldn't be in the conversation at all.
No, I agree.
You know what I'm saying? But it's the fact that he's so passionate and fiery, and you know, say you can say what you will about how it's an act and how, like, you know, he's playing on your weaknesses or whatever. But I would rather have let's wipe away the murder stuff, minus the murder. I think I would rather have a guy like Ray Lewis on my team than Kobe Bryant. And I know this is distinguished, and like we're talking about like accolades and like, you know, being great and notable. But in terms of, you know, the other ways that we've described it, commanding great respect, you know, we've been crapping all over Kobe all night. We should be, and this has been the bane of his existence his entire career, is like he's constantly trying to one up Jordan. Everything that he does is a battle with Jordan. It's a battle with Jordan. It's his entire career. It's so sad. Because he's a great player, but like his entire existence is like, well, he's not Jordan. He's not Jordan. He's not Jordan.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ray Lewis, like, and I feel like and it's not necessarily Kobe's fault. If Jordan didn't exist, would, you know, what would Kobe's legacy be?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then you look at Ray Lewis, and it's like, we don't ever do that with Ray Lewis. It's not like a Dick Buckus or like, you know, Urlacher or something like that. It's like, pretty much it, you know, Singletary. You never hear he's old enough to be Singletary, but I just like that. And I'm gonna get a lot of criticism from my Patriot fan friends or anyone, because you know the guy has done some really shady stuff, and a lot of people say it's an act, but I still get caught up in that. I still get caught up in that nonsense. I don't know what it is, but I still get caught up in that hoorah mentality, the fact that he can go to a random high school that is totally unrelated to him or any of his kin and go in there into that locker room and give a speech, and they go out there and they want to murder. So that to me is why I ironically have Kobe at three and then I have Ray at four, but that's why Ray's at four. Other than him starting his career in 96, I feel like he needs to be included because he brings that extra element to it.
See, I look at it as just.
And then with Jeter, I don't want to. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I feel like I completely just skipped over Jeter. Is the fact that Jeter, he despite being this boring guy that we talk about, that like, he feeds you what you want to hear, and like whatever his dalliance is with all these chicks, it's the fact that he is pretty damn clutch in the playoffs.
You know?
And you know, he's made some great plays. He's gutted out some injuries, and you know, I feel like out of his tenure with the Yankees and the fact that he's been the face of the franchise, and he, you know, he doesn't get a ton of criticism outside of you.
Yeah.
So if we're talking talented physically talented, physically gifted, talented.
He's probably the last of the four, to be honest, physically talented.
Yeah, but he just, it's just,
yeah.
He just finds a way to command great respect, to be authoritative. Everyone on that team believes in him, and they buy into it. And he's been successful, you know. Some of that's got to be contagious. There's a certain limit to your physical talents, and then there's the people that Kobe, not as physically talented as Tiger Woods, I don't think, but like close second. But it's just like that extra layer.
Here's the thing I'm going to say about, and I agree to an extent about what you're saying. But my thing is, I'm judging this straight on what they've done on their field, on the golf course, and all of that. And we could talk about off the field, and I know distinguish includes the adjective that you just said, but the bottom line is, we don't know anything about what Derek Jeter really did to the clubhouse. We know what the media has told us he did to the clubhouse. And I'm going to harp back as much as we've talked about Manti Te'o, but up until 2 weeks ago, we thought Manti Te'o was this smart football player, this leader in the clubhouse, all this stuff, and you realize that none of that was really true because even within the locker room, players are like, we know he's BSing us. So, and up until 3 years ago, we thought Tiger Woods was this holier-than-thou guy, and he's not holier-than-thou. So I don't want to – every time we think we know a guy is a really good guy, I don't want to buy into it because – all that says is his ability to present himself as that. And until I know a person, I know, you know, you're a good guy. I know Tony D is a good guy. I know if I know an athlete personally, I'll be like, well, I know that person is a good guy. Or I, you know, deep down, I know this guy's a jerk. I don't know any of these people. So just because they're able to manipulate the media or manipulate their friends or their teammates or whatever to portray them as that, I don't buy into any of it. So I'm going by just off what they did on the field. And so that's why I have Jeter 3, and that's why I had Kobe 2. And Kobe's a jerk of a guy, but he's able to succeed. And whatever he does on the court is able to translate into wins and championships. And as much as we make fun of his 81-point game and him watching it and all that, he's able to take that talent and translate it. And as great as Jeter is, and there's no denying that he's great, of the three guys, I'm just talking about a greatness of his career. The majority of his success occurred in his first 7 seasons. If you want to talk about playoff success and all of that. Now, he's had great postseasons where they haven't won, but he's also had bad postseasons. He was the guy hitting .500 this past postseason when everybody else collapsed. If he was this great galvanizing leader, why didn't he do it this past postseason? You know, It questions what that means, that you're this great leader. I don't believe in leaders in the clubhouse that they have that much to do with anything. Because everybody talked about Justin Veritek being this great leader. He didn't lead the Boston Red Sox 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe in that. It sounds great because a great player and his team around him plays. At the end of the day, it's the players on the field that executing. And so I'm not that big of a believer where I'm going to thrust him ahead of these other guys.
Well, I'll give you an example. Just in this postseason alone, Peyton Manning versus Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
Now, you would say, judging based by what you're saying, Peyton Manning is more distinguished than Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
But in terms of, I guess I'm taking it from a team perspective.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to have an anonymous poll, and you went around and you're like, who do you want in your clubhouse? Who do you want on that field commanding and leading, blah, blah, blah?
I always go back to, you're in heaven 100 years from now. Who are you drafting first? You drafting Peyton Manning or Ray Lewis? Now, you could talk about the impact of a linebacker.
And newsflash, Ray Lewis could have more Super Bowl wins than freaking Peyton Manning in 2 weeks.
Okay. There's guys that have more Super Bowl rings than Dan Marino. There's guys that have more Super Bowl rings than a lot of guys.
But that's a lot of that's just circumstance and just being on the right place.
I mean, Tony Gonzalez doesn't have any Super rings. He just got his first playoff win. Does that make him a bad guy?
I couldn't believe that, by the way.
He never had a playoff win. So that is such like a New York skew up to how you judge a guy to me. That, oh, you judge him by Super rings, judge him by world championships. I mean, there's so many other things that happen. I mean, Peyton Manning put them in the position to win the game. The idea that they drove 80 yards in a minute and 2 seconds with no timeouts
is not Peyton Manning's fault.
I'm just looking at the broader definition of the word, the fact that you're showing...
But you're an English major. but we don't know... The thing about... We don't know how... What kind of people they are, really. So that's why I don't want to really judge that. I'm looking at their career. When I say distinguished career, I want to say you look at their career as a player, not as a person, because none of us know what these kind of people are.
Right.
People talked about Lance Armstrong 6 months ago being this great guy, and he's a horrible person. And there's plenty of people that we think of as bad people who are probably good people. We don't know any of these people.
Yeah,
I've been saying
also,
we have this show since the show started. I don't ever look in – like, Mark Sanchez is probably a great guy. He stinks as a football player. You know what? Tim Tebow clearly is a good guy. Is what we know, but he could be. How do we know that Tim Tebow isn't a horrible person? We only know it from what we see, and I only judge people when I meet them. I never like, okay, this guy's a great guy. Yeah, and you meet him, and you turn out he cheats on his wife, or he does this. You know, so we don't know that. Tom Brady knows a good guy. He's got a kid out of wedlock, and nobody wants to talk about that guy, that kid.
Jet. The kid's name's
is
Jet.
Really?
Yeah,
yes,
Jonathan
Edward
Thomas.
Thomas.
I don't want to talk about that. All right, we're running out of time, even on the
bonus
comeback.
Time.
We all have Ray Lewis at number four.
Absolutely.
Begrudgingly.
We're gonna we didn't get to Manti Te'o. He was in my 5 and 10. We're not gonna get to it. The only thing I'm gonna leave you guys with one little comment. And I heard this on a caller called into Open Anthony. He made a great point, and to me, this is the nail in the coffin point about why Manti Te'o is lying. So he claims he got this phone call at the ESPYs, right? December 6th, he got a phone call, and he goes, it was a number I recognized as Lene's number.
Right.
Name a person that you're very close with that is not in your cell phone under a name. Name an amount of phone numbers in your phone that you're just like, oh, I kind of recognize. Name a phone number you recognize.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be under my boo?
Yeah.
Lene, my girlfriend, the wifey, something. It's under his. He didn't have the time over the 600 phone calls he made to this girl.
To store her number?
It's just like, I vaguely recognize this crazy SoCal number. Oh, this is Lene's number. He said that. He said it was a number I recognized as Lene's. You wouldn't put this number in your phone as Lene's home, Lene's cell. That is, to me, and somebody called, and I never heard it anywhere else, but to me, it's like, of course.
Yeah.
This guy is a BSer.
Yeah.
Well, it's late night. Bullshitter.
So,
wait, your phone, when you call me, it doesn't say, well, this is weird Jersey number. This is Neil Lynch calling me.
But
it's Tony D.
Number,
it's like, oh, it's a 203. I might just look this up.
The only excuse I can think of.
You're a kid.
Is that if I'm
a side piece.
If I'm in like a if I'm at like a really like hectic event like that where there's stuff going on and your mind's somewhere else and then I get a call from a number that is eerily similar to a number that I know from heart.
So you think it was another number? It wasn't Lene's number.
I don't think it was Lene's number.
It was
a number.
661, blah, 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 blah.
There was a number very similar and you're looking at it like, whoa, that looks like the number that I know and love. And then you pick it up, and it's like your dead girlfriend, your fake dead girlfriend.
See, that's BS. If you're at the ESPYs, you're not picking up a random number from California. I get numbers from California all the time.
Yeah, I was in love with
him,
dude.
Asking me, I get numbers from California asking me to open a credit card, asking me to do whatever. You'd be like, well, this isn't Lene's number, because if it was Lene's number, it would show up as Lene. Some random number from California, when I'm at the ESPYs, I'm like, I'm probably not going to pick this up. It's probably a telemarketer.
Well, I think it's obvious by now that Manti did not have a lot of friends. So he's looking to pick up the phone.
You are not your... You are fibbing.
I'm just saying, this guy does not sound like he's very socially adept. And so he probably doesn't get any phone calls, first of all.
I'm getting a phone call.
He's like, oh my God, I'm getting a phone call. And it looks like Lynette is. And she's been dead
hold
for
on,
3 months.
Hold on, Rich Eisen, I got to pick this up.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
All right, well, that's the end of our show. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. We gave you a lot of overtime this week, so you got to love us for this week. Next week, we got Nate Collins on. We're going to do Super Bowl previews. Check us out on www.tristatesportsguys.com and facebook.com/. Next Twitter.
Twitter.
Let's see if you get it. You can never get it.
Tri-State Sports.
No.
Underscore. Guys. Underscore.
What is it? Tri-State underscore sports.
Tri-State underscore sports. It's so easy.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. All right. Check us out on that. Follow us. Follow me at Michael underscore DePalma.
Just follow me around the streets.
I'm just doing great things every day.
I'll lead you to the promised land.
All right. We'll check you out next week.